ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bloodstock podcast with co-hosts Justin Darcy and Taylor Dyke.
Welcome to episode 29 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast, proudly sponsored by Morgan & English Law Firm. I'm Taylor Dyke, and joining me today is co-host Justin Darcy, along with our special guest, Ben Willis. My racehorse has become the hottest form of racehorse ownership in the industry through micro-syndication, allowing people a chance to experience the thrill of ownership for a minimal and once-off fee. Ben and the team at My Racehorse have already given owners the thrill of a lifetime, having won Group 1 races with Just Fine and superstar filly Apocalyptic. From runners in the country to Metro Racing and even the Melbourne Cup, My Racehorse is certainly the new way forward for entry-level racehorse ownership. Ben, welcome to the Business of Bloodstock.
Thank you very much, Taylor and Justin. Appreciate you having me. Excited to have a chat.
We'll kick off. Firstly, a big thank you for coming on. We know this is a very busy time of year for you with events around Australia and horses racing across the spring carnival. How was the busy spring period for you?
It was awesome. We were quite lucky, really, to have, as you mentioned there, Apocalyptic being able to run through and chalk up a few wins, two Group 2s and a Group 1, and really gave us an experience that, you know, there's nothing quite like it when you're standing in that mounting yard and your horse has won a Group 1. It's really hard to describe. That excitement is just absolutely electric. And we had a bunch of other horses as well running throughout the period, so it was good. We had a fair few winners through September and October, and then had a couple in Cup Week, but none of them won, unfortunately. But it was nice to have horses running through Flemington in the biggest carnival of the year.
Well, that's the key part, is to have those horses running in Australia's headline races and competing across the biggest stage in the country. But we will touch on a few of those horses a bit later, including Apocalyptic. But just firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself, Ben, and how you got involved in the industry to actually get where you are today.
Yeah, it's a good question. I could go quite a while back through my story, but I actually went to uni to study physiotherapy. So that's what I originally wanted to do. And then when I was doing my bachelor's degree at Melbourne Uni, I kind of got this bug to want to do acting. So I was doing a bit of film and TV acting, and then I was working in advertising at the same time. And while I was working in advertising, I was just taken by the excitement, the electricity of that agency, long hours, not a lot of pay, but a lot of fun at the same time. And just being able to kind of get under the hood of, you know, promoting different products to customers and why people want to buy different things and whatever else. So I did advertising, and that's where I met my now business partner, Rob Dow, who launched My Racehorse with me. We met in our advertising agency days about 15 years ago. And then from there, I moved into marketing, where I worked on the AFL sponsorship with NAB. And then after that, I went to TAB, the betting agency, to lead their racing portfolio. So for thoroughbreds, greyhounds and harness. And I was, ended up being the head of Sky and Tabcorp marketing. And then that was really when I got into the industry. I was always into racing. I grew up with seven brothers and sisters. Dad always owned horses. So we're always, you know, following racing from quite a young age. But working at TAB was my first exposure of working in the industry. Absolutely loved it. It's such a big industry, but it's also very intimate at the same time. Like, you always, like, it, for so many people that work in it, you always keep running into the same people in different jobs. So it's such a great industry. And then me and Rob were syndicating horses out just for fun. It was just a hobby we were doing to mates. And it just so happened to be that two of the people in one of the horses we were syndicating were consultants for this American company who were looking to bring My Racehorse out to Australia. And so Rob and I were running events. We were doing naming contests. We were really engaging our owners that we had, which were just our mates, in this new way of racehorse ownership. And then they thought, you guys might be perfect to do this. So then Rob was working at Sportsbet, I was working at TAB, and they just tapped us on the shoulder and said, do you guys want to try starting up My Racehorse? And the appeal of going from a big corporate institution like TAB or Sportsbet to starting up something from scratch was really appealing and exciting for us. And so that kind of really gave us the platform to test it out, see what would happen. And that was about 4.5 years ago, and it's been a fair grind for the first couple of years, but now the following 2 years after that have been a lot of fun. So that's really, I don't know how far you want me to go back, but that's really my backstory through how I got into racing and then how Rob and I sort of launched My Racehorse and where it is today.
Before we go in deeper into My Racehorse, I just want to quickly touch on Tab there. Obviously, you mentioned there it was your first experience working heavily within the racing arms as such. What were your biggest learnings from that, and what have you implemented from that into what you do today?
Yeah, I think, like, you can always be interested in racing and follow it. But once you're actually working in it, your knowledge and interest levels and experience of it just, they entrench to a whole new level, right? Like, you can, that was probably one of my biggest learnings, was you don't know how little you know about racing until you actually work in racing. And so the 5 years I did at TAB were, like, I just stayed in racing at TAB, and the 5 years I did there really taught me so much about racing, whether that was horses, preparations, the sort of racing patterns, the way the industry works and the politics within the industry, which is very key for anyone who's wanting to get into racing to be able to understand that. And then and that really held me in really good stead to then be able to apply that knowledge, but also just the nature of the industry. Like, it's nonstop. When I was working on the AFL has the start of a season, it's got the mid-season, end of season, finals, trade period. It's kind of chunked into really key blocks, but racing in Australia, it doesn't really slow down. Like, if you have a slow July, you're probably doing, or June, you're probably overdoing something at Royal Ascot. Or if in, now that we're out of the carnival and you're in November, December, you're probably looking at what you're doing for Magic Millions. So I think the nature of the racing pattern across Australia, working at TAB taught me so much about that as well, how to really keep up and really to always be on the go, because the minute you take your foot off the pedal, that's the minute that you start to fall behind.
Absolutely. We'll touch a little bit more on My Racehorse now. As you said, you and your business partner, Rob, launched back in 2021, and the growth has been so strong ever since. Can you walk us through, obviously, it was an American company originally, but through your business model and how it's sort of evolved since the beginning?
Yeah, definitely. So we launched off the American model. They won the Kentucky Derby in 2020. And they were partners with Spendthrift at the time. And Spendthrift obviously had an arm in Australia. So for them, they wanted to expand globally. And because the arm of Spendthrift was in Australia, they thought it was a logical starting point and stepping stone, because we could partner with Spendthrift in Australia. And our initial horses that we offered out were effectively Spendthrift horses that we took 10-20% off. So that's where it all started. And then as we've kind of evolved over the past 4 years, the American company is still very much a big part of us. Like, our founder, I still work with it, based over in Kentucky, and we work with them on a sort of a month-to-month level, just to keep up and share learnings and insights, because their brand and product isn't that much older than ours. It's only a couple of years, so there's still a lot that we're both learning about each other's businesses and the market. Then but where it's really grown to is now it's gone from 2 people, and our only customers were me calling my family and friends, begging them to buy a share so we didn't get in trouble from the US guys. Now we've got over 65,000 owners, and we've got 12 employees. And, you know, that's been a huge team effort to get it to that point. We've got 60-odd horses, trainers from all different parts of Australia, WASA, Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria. And then we are expanding into Tasmania next year, and we've just recently launched to New Zealand off the back of Willie Doit winning the Derby over there. So it has grown, but, you know, that's been a huge sort of contribution from all people, if that makes sense. Like, it's obviously the staff have been great, they really have, but we've had a couple of really good ambassadors that have got behind us right from the outset. So Jason Richardson and Emma Friedman have been really good, and then our trainers as well, they've really just embraced what we've been trying to achieve. And we can't offer this entertainment experience without the trainers buying. They have to be there to run events, meet our owners, kind of do all those sort of things. And so being able to offer that full 360 experience takes buy-in from a lot of parties and the racing bodies as well. So it has grown, but it hasn't grown without the help of an army of people behind it.
Well, that's the key part, is having that support behind you when you're launching a business like this. But just touching on the launch of the business, of course, it's a micro share model for owners, essentially. For those who may not have been involved in MyRacehorse before or interested in learning, how does your model differ from traditional racehorse syndication, and what advantages does it offer to your racing fans and your owners?
Yeah, so our model's slightly different in the sense that we fractionalise down our share units in smaller percentages. So people can buy into our horses from 0.01%. And so that means that when they buy in, it might cost them anywhere from $55, maybe up to $300. It depends on the horse and it depends on the actual model that we've done at the time. So basically, when you buy into a micro share, you buy that percentage of the bloodstock, a small contribution to our equine welfare fund, there's a management fee, and then you also pay for your ongoing training fees as well as an asset compliance fee all up front. So everything's up front, which means once you buy in, you don't have to pay again. So I think where it differs from traditional ownership, we have the no ongoing fees component to it, if that makes sense. So you pay once and that's it. You don't have the monthly fees come in, which a lot of our owners really love. While we're a micro share business, fundamentally, we do also cater for people who are wanting to take on bigger chunks, but they're doing it within that model, if that makes sense. So they're still paying for all their training fees up front, but some of the different sort of overhead costs, because they're taking a bigger unit, like buying in bulk, are removed because of that. So I think the main way it differs from purely comparing traditional ownership to our model is you can buy in from a smaller price and you don't have to pay the no ongoing fees component to it. Whatever doesn't get used from that no ongoing fees fund at the end of the horse's career, because that turns out to be about 3 years of ongoing training fees. So let's say the horse runs for 1 year or 2 years, owners get reimbursed what wasn't used from that pot of money, as well as any sale fees and whatever else. So they get reimbursed there, but everything else is quite similar. If you own 1% of a horse, you get 1% of prize money. If you own 0.01, you get 0.01. So you get what you pay for, if that makes sense. And then what we really pride ourselves on is offering this entertainment experience. So something that, you know, I always talk about this, you can pay $100 and you can go to the AFL, have 3 hours of great entertainment, a really good time, hopefully your team wins. If your team wins, you don't get anything out of it other than a bit of pride and a good experience. So what we try and communicate there is you can pay the same amount and get 3 to 4 years of a lot of fun in racehorse ownership. Obviously, if your horse wins, you get a little bit more out of it. And we see the entertainment and sports industries really as our key competitors as opposed to traditional racing syndicators, because it's quite different archetypes of people who are trying to get into both. So that's where we really sort of focus our energy, to make sure that we're offering that we're really embracing the entertainment piece. We're running events, like some of the events we run are enormous. We have about 1,000 people there. We had one through the spring where one of our horses, Charcoals, was running in a Pakenham Sprint Series final, and he won on the day, on the night. And we had about 500 owners in the hotel all going for him and betting on him. And that sort of atmosphere just erupts, and it really was a moment where we could sit back and reflect and go, yeah, cool. We're bringing more people into racing. They're really passionate about what we provide and they're having a great time while they're doing it. So everything's done through our system. We have our updates, our insights. We try and offer more than what you would standard get just with a trainer. But if you bought directly with a trainer, you might get one update a week when the horse is in work, but we try and provide extra bit of insight content. Like, we got a really good team who are quite savvy with their ratings, analysis, our videography, different editing, imagery, whatever it might be. And we try and really immerse people. So if you own 0.01% of a horse with us, you should feel like you own more than what someone who owns 15-20% of a horse with someone else does.
And that's the thing. We were just about to touch on the communication between trainers across all over Australia, but a big part of it all is your My Racehorse app as well. Taylor and I, of course, have recently gotten involved with My Racehorse and had a look around, and got to see Transcend run across the carnival, which was super exciting. I guess how important is it to have that app there as a key pillar behind the communication with owners? And, you know, plus my inbox, I'm always getting updates on the horses that I'm involved with. Taylor, exactly the same. It is outstanding communication. It's such a crucial part for keeping people in the game.
Yeah. Firstly, before I answer that, who is your favorite horse that you've got with us?
I mean, I've got Transcend probably is my favorite, purely because I've got some friends involved in her as well. So I see the great enjoyment that they get out of it as well. So to be able to enjoy that thrill with them, that's what I love about it. So that's probably why she's my favorite.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. What about you, Taylor?
Recency bias, I have to say, Transcend. I thought her first up run in Australia was very encouraging, and I reckon when she comes back from that little break she's having, she'll be a pretty serious little horse.
Yeah, no, I agree. I love her. She's a bit mad as a cut snake at the moment, but that's
all the good
Michael.
Ones are.
Yeah, when I was talking to Michael yesterday about what he's going to do through the autumn, he was a bit baffled. But anyway, we'll see how she comes back, and I think she'll have a great prep coming up. So I think a really important part of what the app provides is connection, as you said there, Justin, like you've got mates who own as well. And, you know, whether you're bringing mates together into a horse or whether you're bringing people that have never met each other, like we're really growing and fostering this community of like-for-like racehorse fans. And they meet each other at different events. They come together at race days. They, whether it's online Facebook groups or whatever else. So I think that's a really key part about it. But that tech platform that we have and the app, it is so imperative to be able to provide the experience we do. Because what that can allow, at the moment we've got 65,000, but that we could do a very similar job with 1 million owners, if that makes sense, because it's powered by that tech engine behind it. So, you know, sending out customer service would be a different story, but sending out updates, uploading videos, getting people into race day ticketing, everything like that, it's all done through that engine. And the app is good, admittedly, but this is a bit of an insight into our general mentality. We think it can be a lot better. As I said, Rob and I both came from Tab and Sportsbet, and where our app is, speaking quite critically compared to where betting apps is, it's poles apart. So there's a lot of improvements still to come in the way we innovate and produce a more higher quality app, because it is so important, the website and app experience, to sort of foster that broader ownership experience, which is what we're trying to do.
As you say, the people getting involved, going to events, we had Steve Davis on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you've got 1% of the horse, but 100% of the fun. It seems like that sort of community that you're building is very important as well.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, anyone who makes sort of a comment or a jibe that it's not real ownership, you got a hair of a tail or whatever they say, like, all you have to really do is get in a mounting yard or get to a race day on one of the days that our horses win, and you can see how much it does mean to everyone involved in it. And so racehorse ownership is such a rare, this is why I loved it. I love it. And this is why I was so attracted to get into the industry, is you always want to compete at something at the elite level. Like growing up, I always wanted to play AFL, but once I realized I wasn't quite good enough, I was like, okay, what could I do? And I think that's what racehorse ownership really provides for everyone. You can, doesn't matter what your background is, you know, where you're from, what you do for work, sport, whatever. Once you've got a horse that's running around competing at the top level, there's something quite real in that that you're a part of.
This episode is brought to you by Morgan and English Commercial Lawyers, more than just a law firm. They work like external in-house counsel, getting to know you and your business. With offices in Sydney, Scone and Tamworth, and years of experience in the agriculture and thoroughbred industries, Morgan and English deliver practical solutions that work in the real world. Whether it's contracts, disputes, or big picture advice, they're the kind of firm you want in your corner.
We'll move on and we'll talk about your welfare sort of part of the business. And one of the features you offer is the annual transition horse audit and the horse super fund, which is a dedicated to the after racing transition of horses. Could you explain how that works in practice and why it's a non-negotiable?
Yeah. So when we first were asked if we wanted to launch this product to Australia, the first thing we said was, before we even looked at the model, we need to have a strong welfare strategy behind it. A fair bit had happened in the Australian industry around 2020, 2019, where it was sort of getting quite tainted from a welfare perspective. And but it wasn't just because of external factors. It was primarily because, you know, you grow up on a farm with animals, or just being a decent person, you want to protect the animals. And our ambition, we got 60 horses at the moment. We want, in an ideal world, we'd have a 100, 200, whatever it may be, but you don't want to be owning irresponsibly, if that makes sense. So we have been so keen to get a horse welfare strategy to market that we can tag along with My Racehorse. And it's something we're really proud about and really passionate about. And I think what the industry does really well across the board is so many people are also committing to the exact same cause. It's not just a My Racehorse thing. Like when I think of other syndicates, I know OTI do a really good job, Terry Henderson and his crew. And I think it's really inspiring to be surrounded by an industry, whether it's racing bodies, trainers, stables, and other syndicators that are all trying to achieve that common goal. Like you're not in competition with anyone when you're just trying to look after the horse in their post-racing pathway. And so we wanted to do something where our owners can feel really good and a part of what our welfare commitment is, as well as My Racehorse as a company. So when you, as I mentioned before, when you do buy a micro share in our horse, a small percentage of that goes into what we call the Horse Super Fund. And that's we've got the Horse Super Fund to sort of play off a superannuation fund type retirement fund for our horses. So when they finish racing, we draw down on those funds to put them through retraining, whether they need rehabilitation, surgery, whatever it might be, so they have a solid post-racing career. So that's effectively what it is. So it's a contribution from My Racehorse as well as our owners. So far, we launched that about 2.5 years ago, and we've already rehomed over 10 different horses. And the interesting thing about it is, as we know, no one horse is the same as the next. Every horse has their own different set of requirements, whether that's, you know, what they went through during their racing career, and what sort of rehabilitation they might need, or from a rehoming perspective, some of them might just be paddock bound, others might be breeding capable, others may be a nanny, and others may compete in equestrian, dressage, whatever events. And the average racing life of a horse is probably about 3 years, I've heard, but they generally live to 20 to 25. So there is a massive pool of years there where they need to have some sort of home. And so we actually use Jen Krawcheck is her name. I'm not sure if you're aware of who she is. She used to be the general manager of welfare at Racing Victoria. She worked with Rob and myself to really define the strategy, and she runs the day-to-day with Rob of that strategy going into market. So our commitment is any horse that we have owned, so even if we've put them through an online sale and someone else now owns them, once they're ready to retire from racing, we take them back and we map out and personalize their rehoming pathway, and so they've got a career after racing. And then we stay very close to every horse we've retired, and every 12 months we send out a bit of an audit report on where all our horses are up to in the post-racing world. And it's just so important. And it's such a big part that our owners really love. And I respect them for loving it as well. Like it's so important that everyone's responsible in how they go about it, and that we're just playing our role. One thing that I really love about the welfare program is you have these really great examples like Happy Casino. He's a horse that, he was with Lindsay Park's team, and his average losing margin was last by about 10 lengths to second last. Like he was the slowest horse you would ever see. I could run faster than him around the track. But then we put him into the post-racing circuit, and he became quite an equestrian star. Like he had a lot of ability in the equestrian world. And so he's been retrained to be an equestrian horse. And recently, earlier this year, he was competing in a very similar event to the likes of Zaki, who's a multiple Group 1 winner. So in no world should Happy Casino, based on what he displayed at the racetrack, should be able to compete against Zaki based on what he displayed at the racetrack. But I find like the post-racing side of it, it does sort of equalize everything quite a lot. And that's, it's those sort of stories that are actually very interesting.
Absolutely. It's racetrack ability doesn't translate to off-track stability ability. My mum's best polycross horse ran 26 lengths last in two trials and never saw a racetrack. We'll move on now. We know that one of the growing concerns within the industry is the affordability of racehorse ownership. And with that, it's becoming harder at all levels to sell shares in horses. With all of these economic pressures, how resilient has your business been, and has the current economic climate impacted buyers or changed your buying pace at all?
Yeah, it's a really good question. What's really hard about answering this one is the market and the economy has sort of not been going that strong since we launched. So we're kind of counteracting a business that's going through its natural rapid growth phase, which is what, like, they sort of say that in any startup, it probably takes about 3 to 4 years to actually start getting momentum. And so we've kind of gone through that life cycle of the business counteracted with an economy going down over that same period of time, right? So we haven't naturally felt the pinch, but I think that's been offset because our business has just been going through a rapid growth phase. And I think somewhat you can buy shares with us from $55 at the moment, it's not a huge outlay for a bit of enjoyment as well. So I think I'm not saying we're resilient to the economy by any means. One thing we did do is when we did a survey, this was a couple of years ago for Racing Victoria, it did show that about 70-75% of our owners had never owned a horse before joining My Racehorse, which that was really important to show that we weren't cannibalizing racehorse ownership. We're actually bringing a new wave of owners in that can, you know, whether it see us as a gateway and then go to a more traditional model or continue to stay with us and evolve the way they own horses, I guess. So we haven't seen the pinch as such. The business is going strong. Like, as I said, we're up to 65,000 owners now and, you know, 60 odd horses across Australia, and we've recently launched to New Zealand. So those, when you look at those factors, without seeing the numbers that sits behind it all, you have to sort of deduce that the business is in a really strong position. And, you know, I think that's great because I think what we really provide is higher foot traffic to racing. And when you look at, say, attendance over the Melbourne Cup Carnival, I'm not saying that's we contributed to that, but I think racing as a general rule in Australia at the moment has taken a really positive turn over the last sort of 12, 18, 24 months. And we're starting to see big crowds get back to the sport, which is great.
In terms of your demographic, obviously at those buy-in prices, it is technically a market for absolutely anyone from the next gen to an older generation. Who would you say is My Racehorse's target demographic? And second to that, in terms of a next gen, how important is it to make your product, how important is it to get My Racehorse in the face of the next gen as well?
Yeah, we look at our target audience when we do all of our marketing, when we consider what ambassadors we use, how we communicate in market, things like that, our target audience would be about 30 to 45-ish, right? That's who we're chasing after. Generally, they're young professionals. They are interested in racehorse ownership. They're sort of in it for the fun. They want something to stay connected with their mates, et cetera, et cetera. So, but while that's our target audience, when you look at our demographic of owners, as you've rightly called out, we've got every spectrum from 18 years and above. We've got a really good cohort of retirees. We've got that target audience of 30 to 45, 50. And then we do have a huge group of 18 to, let's say, 30-year-olds as well. And so I think that's a really, and then we, compared to what we used to see in betting turnover between males and females, we over-index a lot more in having female owners, which I think is really exciting as well. So hopefully that means we're bringing more women into the sport as well. So that's a really cool part, that the model does appeal to every age band. And you see different buying behaviors within those age bands as well. And you see different elements of the ownership experience that those age bands want out of it. Like, say, the retirees, they love being able to go throughout midweek racing. You know, it gives them something to really stay occupied, whereas the other groups can more want to just make sure they're there for Saturdays, or they want to be able to get there on stable tours. They want to make sure the prize money is in their account and they can withdraw it so they can start spending it on beer or something else. I don't know. So it's really cool that it appeals to everyone. To your second question about how important is it to hit that younger demographic, it's so important. Most people have landed on their sport of choice by about the time they're, I think it's 25 years old is what I've heard. And I think when you look at a racing fan and how people get into it, there's a large group of people who were brought up with it. Maybe their parents were in the industry, I don't know, trainers, strappers, riders, polo, whatever it might be. Then you've also got your group who probably have got into it maybe more from a betting standpoint, like they love their AFL, NRL, NBA, NFL, whatever it might be, and then they start at fixed odds betting and then transfer across to racing. And I think that audience specifically of the 18 to 25, 30, that's the audience that we're really trying to capture. We're trying to really innovate to appeal to that sports entertainment style person who is looking to understand a little bit more about racing and how it works. And, you know, even the act of buying a horse with us, we eliminate so many barriers. You don't need to know a trainer or have a mate that does. You can go onto our website and you can get all the different insights, questions you might have on each horse. And as long as you know how to do online shopping, you can buy a horse with us. So it's a pretty simple process. So the importance of getting that younger group in is key, because it's how we continue to collectively grow the racing industry. If you're not bringing young people in, then yeah, the harsh reality of it is racing probably dies out in about 70 years' time. So it's so important, and it's something that we actively try and do. I think we've got a really good team that actually span between that age bracket as well. So it's kind of the right audience to appeal to that younger demographic.
You mentioned online shopping there. I've got no doubt after hearing that Taylor will be on the computer buying plenty more horses with my racehorse.
I'll check and report back whether she has or not.
Shopping addiction is real.
Good.
The most important part to be able to keep these range of owners on board as well, and it's probably the most important factor for syndication, and that is success. And to have success, you need to have a great bloodstock team behind you. You select horses from the sales, whether you're at a yearling sale or at a weanling sale or tried horses or at an international sale, even online. Who's the team behind my racehorse that's able to select these horses, and what's your role in this as well, Ben?
Yeah, look, Damon will slap me if I don't actually give him credit for any of this as well, so I better call him out. But Damon Gabbity, he's our bloodstock consultant at My Racehorse, and he does a fantastic job. Our process for buying yearlings is far different to buying tried horses. Like, we've had a bit of success with, say, Willie Doit, Engine of War, Just Fine, like all of those processes, which we call a tried horse or a New Zealand import or a UK horse, they are slightly different from yearlings. So it's a pretty big team behind it. Damon really leads the charge from Belmont Bloodstock when it comes to the yearling sales. So I'll talk to yearlings first and give you an example of the upcoming Magic Million sale. We've already identified what trainers we want to be buying horses with at that sale, and we'll generally buy anywhere from 60, 70% of a horse with a trainer. And then, so we'll go in, Damon will work with those particular stables in the lead up to the sale and go, Who's on your short list? Who's on his short list? Combine short lists, and then they'll sort of present it back to me. And then I'll go through it from a marketing standpoint. What could we sell? What couldn't we sell? What do our owners want? You know, there's some really good stallions in the Australian industry that we just have had no luck with. So there are particular stallions, even though they're great, we just won't buy from a yearling sale because there's too many dark memories. So that's how a yearling sale will work. Wouldn't even try to say that I'm an expert with what to look for when it comes to yearlings, but Damon is. So that's why we use him, and the stables are, and their bloodstock agents are. And you know, getting a horse like Apocalyptic was a collaborative effort between Michael Friedman, his Bloodstock team, and then Damon and ourselves to sort of combine and say, yes, this extreme choice filly we want to go after. And I think it's important to have yearlings. They're a bit of a harder sell because they're not bouncing straight into racing. You got to go through the breaking in process about a year, maybe a year and a half, 2 years in the paddock before you actually start seeing some action. And that's really what drives people wanting to buy into yearlings or any horse, when they can start seeing whether they've got ability or not. So they're a bit liable on our books for a period of time. However, they're so important because, as I mentioned before, when you get a horse like Apocalyptic, it's just so rewarding because you've been able to pick it from a yearling sale and owners feel so invested in their journey. When it comes to the Trident and the New Zealand horses, that's a bit of a different kettle of fish. We watch a lot of trials, like myself and a couple of the guys in at the office, and we like to pretend we're quite good at it and what we know to look for. But it's been working, and so in New Zealand, we watch the trials all the time, and then we do quite a bit of work with Andy Williams. I'm not sure if you know him, who has his own team based in New Zealand who does a bit of work. But then every horse we buy has so many different levels of eyeballs and people who see it, because the more people that you trust that can see it, that have an expert eye, whether it's a yearling or whether it's a tried horse, obviously vets as well, the more credibility and hopefully safeguarding you have that the horse has some ability, especially when it comes to those tried horses. So we'll use people like Emma Friedman. She has a really good eye for horses that have exposed race form, so I'll use her quite a bit and say, we're looking at buying this one, what do you think, blah blah blah, then she'll have a look at it and come back with her thoughts as well. So that's just an example of how kind of collaborative we are through the entire process to make sure what we actually buy and say yes to, we genuinely believe that horse has ability. And we've seen that come into fruition quite a bit, and it's sort of something we're quite proud of with that track record we're getting with those exposed horses as well. And we've got a few more that are yet to hit the racetrack that we're pretty pumped about.
The Brisbane Racing Club, Queensland's premier destination for horse racing, events and world-class hospitality. As a Brisbane Racing Club member, you'll enjoy exclusive perks and unforgettable experiences at one of Australia's leading racing clubs. Unlock unlimited members reserve access across Eagle Farm and Doomben, including the thrilling 2026 Stradbroke season. Join today at brc.com.au and feel closer to the thrill, prestige and excitement of Brisbane's thoroughbred racing scene. We talk about those tried horses, and one that's certainly put my racehorse as I guess, that really stamped my racehorse's authority in the industry was Just Fine, and he was sourced in 2022 by Johnny McKeever in the Waterhouse Lot combination from the Tats Autumn Horses in Training sale. He won his first three starts in Australia and did win a Group 1 in that preparation as well. How important was he for your business?
Yeah, Just Fine. He's a classic horse. He was definitely a superstar for our business. Like, he owes us absolutely nothing. And he did. He just really exploded in that first Australian preparation. He went bang, bang, bang and culminated with the Metrop. And, you know, in some ways you kind of get lost thinking, oh, this game's easy. But it definitely pulled us wrong. But he then ran the Melbourne Cup the following year, which, you know, he ran 23rd. So he was the 23rd fastest stayer in Australia is what we call it, but he led the first time around, so that was also good. But even just having him as our inaugural Melbourne Cup runner, that's something we always try and get a horse in the Melbourne Cup. We've been unsuccessful the last couple of years, but he has just added so much credibility and value to our brand. I'm happy to look past the bowl cut that the stable give him before he goes out onto the racetrack. He's always got his bangs out just to make sure that, like, what he does on the track is so inspiring for our owners. And he's actually got a bit of a split personality. He's either first, and if you look at his form, he's either first or he's like gives up and he's 15 lengths last. So he's a big bundle of fun, and I think he has been such a great flag bearer for our brand, especially through that leaner period of 2023 where a lot of our horses were either yearlings or we hadn't quite nailed our bloodstock offering at that point in time. To have a horse like Just Fine, and huge thanks to Gay Waterhouse and Adrian Bott and their team, to be able to deliver what he did on the racetrack, it did really catalyse the growth of the business in what we do.
Yeah, he was the horse that sort of caught my attention. I remember seeing the colours and going, who's this My Racehorse Mob? But he's been a good horse for the stable, that's for sure. You mentioned before that you have just launched in New Zealand, which is ultra exciting. And speaking of New Zealand, you had Willie Dewitt, who obviously won a New Zealand Derby and then came over here to race in some good races. Tell us about your investment into New Zealand and how important that is for your business going forward.
Yeah, the New Zealand racing industry has really taken off, I think, over the last couple of years. I think that they've done a really good job with the different partners they've brought in. And, you know, it's been a happy hunting ground for us, as I referenced before and you did there, Taylor, whether it's Willie Do It or Engine of War. We had others, So Unusual, Transcend, whoever it may be. And through the Willie Do It experience, where he won four races, I think it was, in the lead up to them winning the New Zealand Derby, or three races and then the New Zealand Derby. The way that the New Zealand industry, racing bodies, trainers, stables, other participants got around our business and our brand, it was really inspiring. And, you know, it's so close to Australia naturally, it's a four-hour flight. We've always wanted to expand once the timing was right. The last thing that's one of my fundamentals of building a business is you can't move too quickly. Like, you've got to get your foundations correct where you are before you take on the next challenge. And we had finally got to a position, probably largely thanks to what Willie did over there, where we felt comfortable that we could now take that next step of expansion into another country. And New Zealand was a really logical choice. So, yeah, it's been a really important launch. We've had some really good partners come on board with us as well. And, yeah, we only launched about a week or two ago, and we've already got a couple of horses that are getting close to racing. So I think we're going to be quite exposed having runners on the track before selling shares out there. But it's something we're really excited about. And it's, you know, like, the more we can bring our ownership model that we've seen work in both America and Australia, where it provides new people, whether they're new to racing or new to ownership, the opportunity to get around the sport and buy in, and then immerse themselves in what racehorse ownership is, we want to be able to extend that offering as far and as wide as possible. So it's a really important step for our business.
And I guess as well, the fact that Entain has been such a massive supporter over in New Zealand, it's no doubt probably given you guys a lot of confidence as well to be able to invest in that space.
Yeah, definitely. And Entain they've been really great for us as well. We've came on board with them, and I don't know if you know about the Tab Racing Club, which has obviously exited the market. So as part of that expansion into New Zealand, we've worked quite collaboratively with Entain, and one of the benefits of that deal is we've been able to inherit a few of the Tab Racing Club horses, that, like Transcend, your guys' favorite horse. So that was thank you to Entain. And that's what I mean. The investment that they've put into that racing, into the racing industry over there, has really grown it quite quickly. Like, Champions Day now, I was there earlier this year, the New Zealand Derby and the Kiwi. It's an absolute belter of a day. The New Zealand faithful all get around it. And I think when you're able to race in a jurisdiction for good prize money that has a good following, there's no reason not to be over there, especially when we buy so much out of that industry. It's nice to be able to now keep those, or not keep all of them, but keep some of those horses with local New Zealand trainers.
It's certainly a space that's certainly evolving and exciting for my racehorse and some potential owners in that area anyway. But I do want to touch on your superstar filly. She was the breakout star of the spring in our eyes, and of course for you guys as well, and that's Apocalyptic. She took out the Group 1 Flight Stakes, beating the Pimple in the 1,000 Guineas. For our potential My Racehorse owners that are out there listening to this, what are we expecting from this special girl in the autumn?
She was great in the spring. She was awesome. I still can't believe she got done in the 1,000 Guineas. But anyway, she was fantastic, as you called out. The Autumn Carnival, she will be coming in to hopefully target a race like the Surround Stakes, feels like the most logical first up target, 1,400 meter Group 1. So you know, likely go through a light fingers into that, which is 1200 meters. And then we're like, we expect her to come back better than what she was in the spring. Now, a lot of things obviously change in racing, but she was quite immature as a two-year-old. So we're hopeful that she's continued, she was a bit of a later bloomer and continued to grow and furnish. So we'd see a prep like the light fingers into the surround stakes would be the ideal first round grand final target. And then after that, she really has the opportunity to step into fillies and mares grade and like a Coolmore Classic 1500 meter, or, you know, depending on how hungry Michael wants to get with her, he might want to look at something like a Doncaster or something like that. So there's plenty of opportunity for her. Lady Shenandoah is a really good reference point of a filly that's done it in the past, like had a very similar spring, then went on to what her autumn looked like this time last year or this year. So it's a pretty, as long as she holds up well and, you know, she's been spelling really well, she's put on a lot. Like, they need to stop feeding her or getting her on the walker because she's really put on condition over her time in the paddock. So we're confident she's going to come back bigger and stronger and hopefully can, yeah, have a prep a bit like Lady Shenandoah did in the autumn in her three-year-old season.
It's very exciting. I saw a video on social media of her spelling and she looks like she's very much enjoying it. So hopefully she'll be in for a big one.
That's what I was alluding to. You're spot on. She she looks like a fridge at the moment, so she's probably eating it all as well. So look, and then I think you kind of look at, depending on how her autumn goes, we'll get a really good read then whether she's more suited to sort of those sprint trips, 1200-1400 meters, or whether she's more a miler type filly. So we're not putting any rules on her just yet. We'll get a bit more of a feel for her through the autumn. But she's certainly exciting and certainly one we're looking forward to getting back on the racetrack. She's actually a great example of a filly that, you know, we bought her for $400,000 and we've had to reinsure her recently. And, you know, that's been north of a couple of mil. So she's actually put on quite a bit of value. So our owners are very excited about her.
That's a very nice return. We'll move on now and we'll talk a bit about the Hototsu package. Can you walk us through the concept behind the Stallion Mare package and sort of what it is and what your owners will get out of it in both in terms of the experience and the opportunity?
Yeah. So, look, we really wanted to be able to offer something unique in the breeding industry for our owners. And remember when we caught up with the team at Arrowfield and pitched our idea, they were so supportive. They were like, I was kind of going in thinking, they're not going to sign this off. But when we pitched it, they're like, yeah, that sounds great. We can make that work. And so that's what I mean earlier when I was talking about the growth of the company's been a contribution from so many good partners that we've had along the way, and Arrowfield, a big, big one of that. So the Hototsu pack, it's this offering that, you know, it's no longer available. All of our shares are bought out, where owners buy in and they receive a share in Hototsu as a stallion, as well as 5 brood mares. So of the 5 mares every season, Hototsu covers those 5 mares. And those foals are then raised by Arrowfield. So the mares are in partnership with Arrowfield. Those foals are raised by Arrowfield and with the intent to get them to yearling sales. They then go through the yearling sale ring. Owners receive their return on sale fees through yearling sales of those particular foals. So this is going to be our first year because Hototsu, as a first season sire, now he's yearling there. His oldest progeny will be yearlings through this upcoming season sale. And we've got two of those yearlings going through the Gold Coast Magic Million sale. So whatever they fetch, owners will receive their pro rata dividend based on their sale price. So it's a really exciting offering. And then as well, like, they'll have shares in Hototsu. So we'll be able to, you know, fast forward another 12, 24 months, be able to start tracking Hototsu's performance. Hopefully service fee goes up. They will receive their pro rata share of his cover fees at the end of each breeding season as well. So they kind of get, to really summarize it and so I stop rambling, they get more of a share of Hototsu as a stallion and the foals as well that land and are raised as they go through yearling sales. Now, let's hypothetically say some of these foals hit the big time and those mares, then we want to trade them off and, you know, bring in new mares, they'll return a share in the mare as well. So they own the mare, the foals, and Hitotsu. It's a good package.
Well, it's something new as well to the market that we haven't seen too much of it before, to be introduced to a general racing fan as such, or just someone who's might be scared of the term bloodstock. Obviously, there's a lot of terms that fall under that, and it's for those that don't necessarily know a heap about the breeding side of the industry and the bloodstock side, it can be a bit overwhelming to sort of see it all for the first time. But what you're offering is that first-hand experience to actually get a grasp of what this industry is about. Have you noticed a bigger interest as this has gone on along the last 12 months in what you're actually doing in this space?
Yeah, when we talk to our owners who are in the Hitotsu pack, it's funny because they obviously own shares in horses that are racing, but this is the thing that they, largely speaking as a generalization, this is what they enjoy the most. So my own education through this process has grown exponentially as well. Yeah, and that's why it's so important to do it with a partner like Arrowfield that know what they're doing. Like if I was trying to breed horses myself in my farm that I grew up in back home, God knows where they'd be ending up. But yeah, they really are interested in it and they want us to do more of them. Now, readily available stallions aren't really a dime a dozen, so we just got to wait for the right opportunities to arise. And the important thing is we believed in Hitotsu as a stallion as well. So it has to work for both parties. But what those owners have been is so invested, and it's a bit of a waiting game, right? Like there's not much activity in a first season stallion for the first couple of years, but they've been so invested. And now that these yearlings are starting to get to the Magic Million, like the Gold Coast Magic Million sale, it's pretty incredible that's the sale they're going into. And you know, the excitement, you can feel it from your desk among the 4,000 owners in the Hitotsu pack. So I definitely think it's an opportunity going forward that you could do a little bit more in.
Well, it's just exciting. It's just something that's totally different and certainly took our eye when it was first introduced to the market. And I've got no doubt it'll be a huge roaring success going forward as well, mate.
I hope so. I hope all of our owners are retiring on islands somewhere in Jamaica after Hitotsu's service fee goes up to 200K.
Oh, God, I love the sounds of that. Ben, yeah. We'll just finish here with one final segment here. It's our Fast Five segment, so we'll just ask, we'll throw a few questions your way. Whatever comes to your head first, that can be your answer. So you asked us the question before, who's your favourite horse at my racehorse?
I'm going to be controversial. I'm going with a horse called Storm Leopard. You might not have heard of him yet, but he's a Gayath. It's by Gayath that we got from the 2024 Magic Millions sale. So hard to look past Apocalyptic and Willie and Just Fine, but look out for Storm Leopard in the coming months to hit the racetrack.
Where's your favourite racetrack to attend?
I'm going to say Randwick. Yeah, our horses have the most success there. I'm based in Victoria. But, yeah, I'd say I love going up to Randwick. I think it's great.
Yeah, I've got no doubt you've got plenty of fond memories up there. What about your favourite sale to attend?
Gold Coast Magic Million sale, hands down. It's a great party for a good week.
Absolutely. Bring it on. What race would you like to win the most?
The Arc.
And what's one piece of advice you would look at giving someone looking to get involved in the racing industry or bloodstock industry, whether they be looking for work or for ownership?
I think that the key to survive, in my view, is to have a really good support network. There's so much you can do, but if you don't have a good support network of friends, family, really good mentors, I've got a couple that I really value and trust and respect, like, the racing industry is so up and down, topsy-turvy. There are more lows than highs, let's be honest, but the high does outweigh the regular low. But having I think, that good support network that keeps you balanced, motivated, and clear on your goals, that's probably the best advice I could give.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Ben. A great way to finish off for our listeners. Just want to say a big thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on and join Taylor and I. It's been a pleasure having you on, talking about my racehorse, the history, and your current horses, as well as a couple of horses to look forward to as well in the new year.
Great. Thank you, Justin. Thanks, Taylor. It's been awesome to come on and have a chat. Appreciate your support.